everyone. Welcome to the Panel Show Podcast. Each month, we bring together two real journalists and two improvisers in character to talk about real-world issues, topics, and events. This episode is being recorded on Saturday, January 30th, 2021, boo 2020, live from our own homes over the internet via Zencaster. I'm your host, David Shore. Let's meet tonight's panel. First, our journalists. He's the Queen's Park Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star. Please welcome back Robert Benzie. Hi, Robert.
Hi, David.
And he's the columnist, he's a columnist for the Globe and Mail and also a regular on CBC's Ad Issue. Please welcome back Andrew Coyne. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, David.
And tonight's improvisers are appearing as two of the most well-known radio personalities in each of their markets. That's right, it's Radio Week or Month here on the panel show. First, she's the host of CTWC Toronto's favorite life and love call-in show, No No, How Are You? Please welcome to the show, the totally not real, Margaret Windman. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, David, and thank you so much for having me. And hello, listeners. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Pleasure to have you.
Oh.
And rounding out the panel, we have a late-night DJ who's been bringing the people in the Detroit area the smooth sounds of light rock, jazz, and anything to get you in the mood since the late 80s. You can hear him nightly on 99.7 FM, Michigan's lightest rock. He's a four-time winner of the Golden Throat Award. Please welcome the completely fake Marvin Smooth.
Hello, Marvin. Good evening. Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Shore, for that lovely introduction.
It's great to have you here, Marvin. Marvin, is it true that you once saved a cat from a tree by using just your voice?
That's right. I talked it down, and then I talked it up so it felt better the next day.
Smart thinking, I have to say. All right, well, let's get to our first topic. So, a lot has been happening in the world since our last show in December, and I want to start tonight by talking about our neighbors to the south, the United States. Now, this past week on Twitter, I saw a viral tweet by a woman in the U.S., and she posted, and this is a quote, "The greatest American lie is that people from every other country wish they lived here. They don't," end quote. That tweet received over 379,000 likes, 46,000 retweets, and close to 3,000 comments, both positive and negative. Now, I commented the following, and this is what I wrote. "If I lived in the U.S., I would be bankrupt or dead. I had four surgeries in the past 6 years, three in the U.K. and one back here in Canada. It cost me literally nothing. Healthcare is a human right." Now, my reply got over 2,400 likes and some interesting replies, including a woman in the States who said that her surgery, when she looked at the bill, she was charged $40 for the Sharpie to mark where they were going to make the incision. Now, within the same thread, the original woman who posted the original tweet, she clarified some things, and she said, "My point is that we're not the envy of everyone everywhere, like many tend to believe." And then she added, "American exceptionalism is a lie told to you to make you feel okay about not having healthcare." Now, I think the events of the last 4 years have certainly burst a lot of Americans' bubbles. So my question to you, panel, is would you move south to the United States? Robert Benzie, why don't we start with you?
That's an interesting question, David. I mean, I like going to the United States, and I like parts of it very much. And I've been to a lot of different states. Some parts I don't care for as much. But I'm not sure I would want to move there. I mean, my parents brought me here from the UK when I was five. I was born in Australia. So I'm an immigrant to Canada. And Canada has always felt to me a little bit like the United States with a safety belt. You know, it's kind of like a little just, it's very American, but not too American that you're going to take a risk and be, you know, everything is dangerous everywhere you go because people aren't heavily armed or the racial tensions perhaps aren't as heavy here as they are there. But I do think, though, that notwithstanding the Trump years, the United States is still a beacon to a lot of people from a lot of places in the world. And I don't minimize that. So I don't personally want to move there, but I have many friends who have, and they've had successful lives in New York City, in Colorado, in San Francisco. So I don't know. It's not for me, but I still think it's a groovy place.
Is there something that would entice you? Like, would it take something? Like, your colleague, a former colleague of the Toronto Star, Daniel Dale, now, of course, works for CNN because he was fact-checking Trump every day. Trump, because he wasn't he the Washington bureau chief? Wasn't he already stationed in the States?
Yeah. He moved to Washington for the Star, and then he got recruited by CNN because of his Trump fact checks. And now he doesn't have anything to do. But no, he's busy fact-checking Joe Biden, which is not as onerous a task.
Is there something that if the Star said, "Hey, Robert, we want you to move to Washington"? Is that something you would do?
It's not something that I was particularly interested in personally for my own, you know, because of my family situation. My wife makes more money than I do, so her jobs are a little bit more important than mine. But I think the United States has a lot to recommend it. It's just not. My specialty is covering Canadian and Ontario politics, so there's really not a lot of demand for me at the LA Times or the New York Times.
Right. And Margaret Winmoon, what about you? Would you move down to the States? And if so, if not, like, what is there something that would entice you to move there?
Wow, what a thoughtful question. David, when I sit with that, I think the only thing that would bring me down there is love. I mean, love is the only reason to do anything. That, and perhaps if I could start a turquoise jewelry company in New Mexico. These are two reasons that I can see wanting to do it, but it is definitely a hellscape.
Andrew Coyne, what about you? Would you move down to the U.S. and, or is there something that would entice you to move there?
I think if I were 22, I might well consider it. If I was 40 and trying to raise a family, I think I'd be in a different frame of mind. Like, it's still an extraordinary country. You know, in many ways, the most extraordinary in the world. If you are talented and ambitious, the opportunities for you there are like nowhere else on earth. I lived in New York for about 6 months, and I remember from some of the conversations I had with people down there, you know, in Canada, in Toronto, you have a lot of conversations that go along the lines of, wouldn't it be great if we could do X? And in New York, it was, let's do X. So it still has some of that, you know, it still has those strengths, those enduring strengths of an entrepreneurial culture and an exuberant popular culture and these kinds of things. But there's no doubt that there's a lot of policy questions, broad policy questions like healthcare, like, you know, looking after the poor, et cetera. It's a mess. And its society is divided in a way that's particularly poisonous and toxic. So I agree with that woman who was tweeting, and to the extent that if you are just telling yourself all day long, we're the best country in every possible way, everyone else just wants to be like us, we don't need to make any changes or look searchingly at ourselves, then you're not going to make the kinds of changes that you need to make. And I'll just finish by saying that sometimes that affliction also can be seen in Canada.
For sure about that. Marvin Smooth, you are an American. You're in Detroit. Have you ever been tempted to move to another country, like to leave America?
No way, man. It's a great question, too. I just want to say, you keep calling us, you know, the neighbors to the south, but we're kind of more to the west of Windsor, Ontario. Not as nice a skyline as Detroit, but it's kind of okay. And I just want to go back to you talking about that tweet saying, you know, maybe people could be bankrupt or dead. And I mean, that was Detroit's motto back in the 70s. And you know, if you weren't dead, you were just happy to be alive. And if you were bankrupt, well, the other alternative was death. So it was still okay, man. It was still cool. It was still all right, you know?
All right. Well, thank you for that insight. Let's move on to our next topic. We're
Can I interrupt? Can you get me one of those $40 Sharpies, man? I really want to check out what that vibe's about. You know, I'm like, my penmanship's been lacking lately, and maybe one of those Sharpies would bring me back online. You know what I'm saying, man?
Yeah. The woman who was charged $40 for the Sharpie said that when she next saw her surgeon, she said, where's the Sharpie? Like, she wanted the Sharpie.
You would, man. I agree with that woman. I totally want that Sharpie. Especially okay. If it had touched my body, you know what I'm saying?
I do. All right, let's move on to our next topic. We will likely talk about the fallout and consequences of the Capitol insurrection in Washington, D.C. from January 6th on a later show. Trump's impeachment trial is set to start next week, and people are still being charged and arrested for their participation in the riot. So what I'd like to talk about now is the effect of the Capitol insurrection on Canada. All the political parties here were quick to condemn the insurrection, but I noticed that Conservative Party leader Erin O'Toole and the Conservative Party of Canada's Twitter accounts were unusually quiet in the first few days following the attempted coup. Former Conservative leadership candidate Derek Sloan has been kicked out of the caucus, And I think we've seen the last of the conservatives take Canada back at. So, panel, how do you think the events of January 6 in Washington, D.C. have affected politics in Canada? Andrew Coyne, why don't we start with you?
Well, I actually think it's a bit of an opportunity for O'Toole. The conservatives are stuck in this dilemma where they have a portion of their support that is kind of Trump-friendly, if you will. Not necessarily hardcore Trump, not quite as deluded or as divorced from reality as in the States, but in the mode of that kind of populist outrage. So they're in the delicate position of not wanting to entirely give up that base to parties further to the right of them, if I can call it right. But at the same time, knowing that it's hurting their chances in a terrible way of ever expanding their base, particularly in Ontario and Quebec. So I think actually that the events of January 6th were so shocking, and that showed that the populist right had become so unhinged that it actually was an opportunity for O'Toole to move, to sort of distance himself from that element within his party. And I don't think it's entirely coincidental that you saw them basically trump up, if I can use that word, this pretext to get rid of Sloan in the middle of that. I think they've been looking for opportunities to try to move a little bit further away from that. And as I say, the people around O'Toole absolutely know they are never going to form a government unless they can start to appeal to more center-right voters in the suburbs around Toronto and Montreal.
Martin Smooth, I mean, you are in Detroit, but of course you probably get all the Windsor news and stuff. What do you think?
Hey, man, you know, to go back to your previous talk about, you know, being envious of other countries in the world, the one thing I envy about Canada is all the political parties you have, man. We've only got like two parties down here, man. And sometimes it's a bit of a bummer, but you got five parties going on up there. And the one that never makes sense to me is me and my old buddy, Kiefer Sutherland. We used to hang out back in the late 80s, and he'd talk about his grandfather and the New Democratic Party. And just how new is that party, man? Like, we were talking about it 30 years ago. It feels like that needs a name change. Because, you know, if the conservatives and the Alliance can form a party and just kind of keep the same name, can't the New Democrats do the same thing, man? You dig?
That's a very, very interesting point. Robert Benzie, what do you think? How do you think the events of January 6th have affected and will affect Canadian politics?
I'm not sure they've affected them as much as people think. I mean, you have to remember that if you look at public opinion polling in Canada, 80% or something like that of people polled would have voted for Joe Biden over Donald Trump. So even though there are elements, as Andrew said, of the Conservative Party that are Trump friendly or would nominally be Republican, I'm not sure that there's any political advantage to being that way if you're Aaron O'Toole's party right now. And I think that, you know, that could change. You know, Biden could be a disaster and there could be all sorts of problems, and then Republicans could nominate someone credible next time, and that could all change. But I think the Derek Sloan defenestration is interesting to me, because they should have put a bullet in him a long time ago. And the reason that they put one in him now is because social conservatives in that party were trying to sort of stack the deck for their online convention. They're having a virtual convention very soon, a policy convention, and O'Toole's folks are understandably concerned about that, because he appealed to these folks when he needed their votes for the leadership last summer. He got them, and that's why he defeated Peter McKay, who, by the way, was one of the worst front runners we've ever seen in any political leadership race in Canada that I've ever covered.
And he missed an open net.
Yeah, he literally missed the open net. As he said about Andrew Scheer, quite cruelly during the campaign in 2019. But I think though that O'Toole shrewdly has said since then that his party is open to everyone. It's a big tent that is not going to discriminate against gays and lesbians and transgender people and people of different cultural communities and so on. And I think that's a really important thing that O'Toole has done. Whether voters buy it is another story, because the problem is that he appealed to a lot of, I guess you could call them, intolerant folks to get to where he is now to be the leader. So it's like one of these things: you run one way during the leadership, and you have to dart the total opposite direction in a general election, because people don't. You can't, in Canada, you have to appeal to the center. You're not going to get elected being on the extreme right or the extreme left. So, but again, I don't think that the Capitol, the coup attempt or the insurrection, whatever you want to call it, I don't think that it has too many lessons for Canada. But it is interesting, though, to see that it did take them longer, maybe to pounce on that, to condemn it, than certainly the Liberal Prime Minister.
Well, I think they condemned it pretty quickly, but then there was just like a radio silence. You know, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Margaret Windmoon, what do you think?
Well, I don't want to wade into anything too political because my station is publicly funded. But I do have concerns. You know, culturally, Canada likes to copy the United States. You know, we've seen this with MasterChef Canada. So you think you can dance Canada. And so I do get concerned that there are those cuckoos out there that want to storm the capital, Canada, because we have people with bad ideas here as well and access to furs that they can put on their bodies. So I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop, David.
Now, we all got to admit, we were a little bit jealous of that guy's stomach tattoo. I mean, raise your hand.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I want to say, Marvin, your voice is just, I feel like I'm looking in some kind of mirror, but with my ears.
Margaret, you are like me if I was a woman and, you know, more attractive. That's how I feel about you.
I am blushing.
I feel it.
Like we're all blushing now. All right, let's move on to our next topic. And I'm sorry, Margaret, this is another political topic. Governor General Julie Payette has been forced to step down in disgrace. And at a time when all levels of government here in Canada are tight for money, wouldn't this be the perfect time to get rid of the Governor General altogether? It's a symbolic position left over from colonial times, and it costs the Canadian taxpayers more than $35 million a year. Plus, after retiring from what is a five-year job, former Governor Generals receive a pension of nearly $150,000 a year for life, plus travel and office expenses of up to $206,000 a year. So, panel, does a modern Canada really need a Governor General? Margaret, why don't we start with you?
Well, I am saying I'm available for the job. I mean, I think that you have to be a very good host and you have to be respectful to carry that mantle. I think that I could do it well. I mean, I've worked with a lot of interns and I've never yelled at any of them. I once scared a young man who passed me a tea that was too hot and it did spill on his thigh, but I apologized and I moved forward. So I don't know if we need to get rid of the title. I'm happy to do it. I love a big, beautiful space and I love to host, you know, international people. So
Robert Benzie, what do you think?
You know, I have a very soft spot for the Governor General. Oh, not this particular one, but the office of the Governor General, because I actually I met my wife at Rideau Hall at the Michener Awards in 1994. So I mean, when Ray Natician, who was a lovely fellow, actually, was the Governor General. But Julie Payette was a dreadful choice. The Liberal government did not do any due diligence and did not check her references clearly because they didn't ask anyone who'd ever worked with her before what she was really like. So it's an extraordinary report that was done about the atmosphere at Rideau Hall, and I feel very badly for the scores of people who work there and who clearly didn't feel that it was a safe environment, a positive environment. Having said that, I mean. It's not a matter of just saying, well, because Julie Payette was so terrible, we need to get rid of the Governor General. It's not as simple as that. I mean, she's a Queen's representative in Canada. So if we are going to get rid of the Governor General, that would probably means we're going to have to get rid of the Queen as our head of state.
Well, let me just say that I've been saying for a long time, Andrew and I talked about this on Monkey Toast once. I've been saying for a long time we should get rid of the Governor General. So to me, it's not like this is a sudden thing, but this seems like an opportune time.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in Australia. My dad lives there in Sydney, and in the Republican movement in Australia is much stronger than it is here. Even though they've still never managed to get their own flag, they still have the Union Jack ensign in the corner of their flag. Yeah. They've had terrible situation trying to get an Aus flag movement, as they call it. If you can't get your flag right, we got ours right in 1965. So I'm not sure that there is enough of a maybe after Queen Elizabeth is gone, there might be, if the Crown is no longer popular on Netflix, it might be possible. But I think I just don't think there's a popular will to get rid of the office right now.
Martin Smith, what do you think?
Hey, first I want to reach out to Robert and say, you know, A lot of love came out of those Michener Awards. I can't think of a more romantic place where I want to meet my future ladies. So that's par for the course, my man.
It was the 90s.
It was the 90s. The Michener Awards was where you wanted to be if you were looking for love. You know, it was amazing. I got so many thoughts on the Governor General. First off, you say that Americans, Canadians are different, but we've got things in similar. One of the things is that no American knows what the Governor General does, and most Canadians don't know either. So I think that's where we can get together. And I love a title that combines two things. You know, I'm a radio DJ slash matchmaker, or some people call me a host slash former solid gold dancer, and I'm okay with that. I like the double titles. But in terms of the Queen, I think if you just keep it moving on and you get Meghan Markle on those dollar bills of yours, you know what I'm saying? I think that's going to bring the royal family right back in line. Yeah, I can dig it.
Well, her and you know, they've given up their royal duties.
Everything's negotiable, baby.
A fair point. Andrew Cohen, we've talked about this on the past. What do you think? Do we need to have a governor general?
Well, first of all, finding a wife for Rob Benzie is argument enough, I think, for it.
All right. That's fair.
I'm not sure whether your beef is with the governor general or with the queen. If we're going to have a monarchy, then we're going to have a queen's representative here, because she can't be here to attend to all the duties that it entails. And I actually think even if we didn't have a queen, we'd want to have something like a governor general. So every country has a head of state of some kind to perform those functions that only the head of state can. The only question is whether it's going to be combined with the head of government, as in the United States, or whether you're going to have those offices kept separate. And I think for my money, it's a lot healthier to keep them separate. So that, you know, you don't conflate the two. You don't get, in America, people are constantly, you can see this in a lot of their coverage of the president, that they almost feel obliged to give him a greater reverence than he's due because he's the president, because he represents America. Whereas we're free to sneer at our prime minister as, you know, just a temporary occupant of the job. As it's been said, you know, when the prime minister bows before the queen or before the governor general, he bows before us. The queen represents us. It represents the enduring constitutional system of government in Canada. It represents popular sovereignty. It represents a lot of ideals that are separate from and should be separate from the interests and prerogatives of the government of the day. So, no, I think it's a useful constitutional instrument that we would be very ill-advised to want to get rid of.
All right. Well, let's move on.
I can hear that we all have different opinions here, but I would like to underline something very important, and that is to not trust astronauts. and if I even get a whiff of Chris Hadfield trying to worm his way into this position, I will freak out.
If he does, though, you know, it'll all be guitar ceremonies from now on. All right. Well, let's move on to our final topic. And let's move out west and talk about Alberta. Now, this is another topic inspired by Twitter. Last week, I saw a tweet from someone in Alberta who asked the question, this is what they posted, can anyone name two good things that Jason Kenney has done for Alberta, end quote. There were 150 replies, and not one person could name one good thing that Kenney had done for the province other than maybe drive support to the NDP. Now, also last week, on the CBC's website, journalist Jen Gershon wrote an excellent opinion piece, and it was titled, Hey Alberta, How Is It Going So Far? The subheading was, Keystone Cancellation is Latest Proof That Jason Kenney's Belligerence Isn't Working. She writes, I've been trying to come up with one single solitary win since the provincial election, and I can't find it. It looks to me like the UCP spun a fantasy in 2019, and now it can't make it real. So, the Keystone Pipeline is dead. Kenney gambled $1.5 billion that it would happen. The Alberta Teachers Association is suing the province over changes to their pension plan. And Kenney is at odds with the province's healthcare workers. So, panel, can you think of something positive that the Kenney government has done for the people of Alberta? And what do you think lies ahead for the people of Alberta? Martin Smooth, I know you're in Detroit, but what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I want to tell you a story about a kid at my school. He wasn't a very popular kid, and that's the point. Because no matter what happened in your own life, say you had a father that was angry all the time, a mom that was never home, maybe your clothes never seemed to fit quite right, there was always that other kid that made you feel a little bit better. And we need that kid. And that kid in Canada right now is Jason Kenney. Jason Kenney makes us all feel a little bit better about ourselves because he can't seem to do anything right. You dig?
I do dig. Andrew Coyne, what do you think?
Well, he cut tax rates, which is, if you're in my persuasion, you think was probably in the right direction.
Okay.
To be fair to him, because that's about the only thing I can think of. So to be fair to him, you know, for anybody to be premier of Alberta right now would be a tough fix. Long before the pandemic, that province was in a terrible state because of the collapse of world oil prices and because of its own history of feckless big spending. I mean, supposedly the most conservative province in the country, it's also the biggest spending province in the country. So it was always kind of a little bit bogus. And there was a day of reckoning coming. So any premier who was going to be in office at that time was going to be facing a tough road to hoe, on top of which you then have the pandemic, which is hurting everybody. I think what I would fault Kenney for is not that he hasn't fixed all those problems. It's that he came in there telling everybody, I can fix it all by, you know, shaking my fist at Ottawa and, you know, having a investigating those environmentalists who were saying bad things about us. And it was this kind of belligerence that he would represent, that anger that I understand why is present in Alberta right now. They feel like they've been dealt a raw deal in the last few years. But just representing that anger isn't a program of government. And so while I sympathize, I think anybody in government would be having a tough time, I think he's kind of made the bed that he's lying in because he basically presented as being, you know, I'll shake my fist and everything will fall into place.
Well, really, I mean, one of the things he ran on was bringing back oil and gas, like to the levels it used to be, which Andrew, I don't know if we talked about it on Monkey Toast or it was a live panel show, like before we were doing the podcast. But I remember we talked about it, that, you know, those jobs are never coming back. Most of the jobs in the oil industry now will be automated. So it's interesting to see how this has all panned out for him and, unfortunately, for the good people of Alberta. Margaret Winman, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, I have a very high EQ, and that's why I like to give people advice and expect them to listen to it. When I see Jason Kenney, I think this is a man who is overwhelmed and he needs to take a little break. All right. I remember a period in my life when I was burning the candle at both ends, quite literally. I had started a candle company and it was a mess. And I didn't quite understand what a candle was supposed to do. And I had to take a break. I had to get in the bath and I had to take a deep breath. And I think that's what this gentleman has to do before that big round head explodes.
Okay. Robert Benzie, what about you? Can you think of anything other than Andrew pointed out, like he cut taxes, anything other than that he's done positive for the province?
Well, I mean, he won 55% of the vote in the 2019 election, which is a really impressive tally. And he took, you know, a party back to power. He united a party, the old Progressive Conservative Party and the Wild Rose Party, and bringing them into this new UCP. So that's impressive. And Jason Kenney has always been good at organization and good at the backroom side of politics. I'm less convinced that he is good at the front of the room. And I think that, to Andrew's point, the angry, you know, Ed Anger, you know, remember that old Ed Anger column in the Weekly World News? He's kind of that shtick. I don't think that works very well. And it was not a surprise, unfortunately, that Keystone XL was canceled. And yet, I mean, we knew that if Biden won the election and all the polls said that he was going to win the election, and then he did win the election, that this was going to happen. And so this sort of uproar in Alberta that, you know, Trudeau didn't do enough for Alberta and he's let Canadians down, or he's let Albertans down. It's very much of a shtick, because I mean, there's nothing that Justin Trudeau could have done to make the new president of the United States build this pipeline that was, you know, we based so much of our economic activity in Alberta on this, and it's unfortunate and it's too bad, but it's the way that the cookie crumbles. His management of the pandemic is a different story. And Andrew makes a very good point. Alberta has had an artificial economy for a very long time. Remember, it's the only province or one of the only provinces, maybe the only province, that doesn't have a provincial sales tax. So you go to Alberta, it's cheaper to buy things because they don't. So they're crying poverty, but they're not actually doing very much about getting themselves out of poverty because they don't have. And whether you like taxes or don't like taxes, sales taxes are, you know, conservatives should like consumption taxes. So I've never mm-hmm. understood why a conservative government in Alberta, which routinely gets more than 50% of the vote, couldn't get a sales tax through, and why Rachel Notley and the Democrats didn't foist one on Albertans when she was in power, and I think she may be in power again after the next election, the way the polls go, is beyond me.
All right. And now it's time for us to play Fact or Fiction. Each month, while doing research for the show, I come across a story that makes me think, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. And then I find a few more stories that are just as crazy. So we're going to use some of these headlines from the stories to play Fact or Fiction. I'm going to read a headline, and then I'll ask each panelist if they think it's a factual story or fiction. Feel free to play along at home. Let's start. Here we go. Our first headline. Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina candle reportedly explodes in UK woman's home. Fact or fiction? Margaret, since you used to own candle company, maybe.
No, this one, that just gave me shivers because actually a lot of my candles did explode and they were scented, not of my vagina, I'm not that kind of girl, but other things that I found intimately comforting, like the inside of my animal's ears or, you know, other things like that. So, I mean, I'm going to buy this and I just feel terrible to think of that candle splattered all over the walls.
All right, so you're going to say
fact,
that it's
David,
a fact.
Thank you.
Andrew Quine, what do you think, fact or fiction?
I'm going to go with fact because it's Gwyneth Paltrow, and I would believe virtually anything about her.
So to you, she's like Florida woman. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Martin Smooth, what do you think, fact or fiction?
I think it's fiction, man. I don't think Gwyneth Paltrow's candles have traveled well across the pond, if you know what I'm saying. So I'm going to say no to that one.
Robert Benzie, what do you think, fact or fiction?
I think it's fiction. I mean, I just can't believe that Gwyneth Paltrow's candles wouldn't perform that well.
Well, it is 100% a fact.
Wow.
The candles are called This Smells Like My Vagina. That's the title of the candle. And this article is from the January 18th of this year's New York Post. So that is a fact. And the woman who, you know, whose home the candle exploded, and apparently she won it.
Hey, Dave, you know, my first radio show was called This Smells Like Your Vagina. It was very popular in Ann Arbor.
I have listened to that. That was a wonderful program.
Thank you, Margaret.
All right, let's move on to our next headline. Here we go. A dinosaur's butthole was a Swiss Army knife of orifices. Fact or fiction? Robert Benzie, why don't we start with you?
I'm trying to get my head around what a Swiss Army knife of orifices. I guess it has many uses. I need one of my kids' dinosaur books when they were little. I'm going to say, I guess, fact.
You're going to say fact. Okay, Martin Smooth, what do you think?
You know, if they had to go through customs like I have, and I'm going to say fact because I've used my butthole as a Swiss Army knife to put a few things in there that maybe I don't want other people finding out about.
Okay. Andrew Quine, what do you think?
It has to be fact because it's so bizarre. You couldn't possibly have came up with that. So that's got to be fact.
Well, I take that as an insult.
Yes.
Let's move on to Margaret Windham. What do you think, Margaret? Fact or fiction?
Well, I think if a butthole was able to do so many things, why would the creatures be extinct? You know, I mean, it seems like this is something that we should all be focused on. And I wish my butthole could do more than what it does. So I am going to say that this is fiction. Yeah.
You're going to say it's fiction. And it is 100% a fact. Yes. So most of you are right. And that's a headline from today that appeared on the CBC website of Quirks and Quarks. So if you want to read up about that, about what the Swiss Army knife orifices means.
If only they'd all banded together, you know, Margaret, back in the time and turned their buttholes toward that meteor, maybe they wouldn't be wiped out. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. And what an image that is. Very gorgeous.
I want to see that in Ice Age 4. You know what I mean?
Let's pitch it.
Let's go to our last fact or fiction headline. Andrew, this one is for you because it's a Florida man headline. Florida man sues Donald Trump for losing 2020 election. Fact or fiction? And Andrew, we'll start with you.
David, as you know, I make it a rule that if it's involved support a man, it is a fact.
It is a fact. Let's see. Okay, Martin Smooth, what do you think?
I think it's fiction, man. I think Florida loves its Donald Trump. I mean, they kind of relate to him. They understand where he's coming from. He's a neighbor. You know, I think sometimes you got to remember that he did say fake news, and sometimes there is fake news out there, my babies.
All right, Robert Benzie, what do you think?
I think it's fiction, David, because anyone who's stupid enough to sue Donald Trump for losing the election thinks Donald Trump won the election.
Okay. And Margaret, what do you think? Is that fact or fiction?
Yes, I think it's fiction because I feel that a Florida man wouldn't have it together enough to sue. I would think he would more likely shoot his gun into a pond or throttle a loose animal, you know? So I just don't think that this is fact.
David, can I change my vote?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Stop the count.
Right. Further reflection, I think you put Florida man in there just to dupe me into saying fact. So I'm switching it to fiction.
And your regular listeners of the podcast will know that I do a Florida man one every time you're on the show. So, because it's my way of thanking you and also making up to you for making you watch Tiger King when we talk about Tiger. Well, it is 100%. It's fiction. I did make it up, and it was because of Andrew. Okay, guess what, everybody? That is the end of the show.
Yay!
All right, I'd like to thank our panelists, Andrew Coyne, Robert Benzie, Kayla Lorette, appearing as the not real Margaret Windmoon, and Paul Constable as the completely fake Doug Smooth.
Marvin Smooth, Marvin Smooth.
You're right. You know what? You were Doug McKenzie last time.
That's right. Doug Smooth's my cousin. He lives in Florida. He's suing the president right now.
That's good to know. Music for the Panel Show podcast was provided by Jim Clayton. You can get more info about the show on our website, thepanelshow.com. You can also follow us on Facebook under the Panel Show podcast or on Twitter at Panel Show Pod. My name is David Shore. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and tell your friends. Stay safe, wash your hands, and we hope to catch you in another month. Thanks, everybody.